This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today.
Thought about the difference between men and women travellers until I got chatting with some fellow travellers not so long ago. All of them were men, and all of them had these great stories about how they got chatting to some stranger in a bar in some obscure country and ended up going on this crazy adventure with them and basically having the time of their lives. Which is funny, because when I get chatting to strange men in a bar, no matter which country, things tend to take a very different turn. And that's the first time I actually realised travel for women is very different to travel for men.
Mesdames et messieurs, départ de Rostar est imminent. Attention, la flotte est au-dessus.
So, in today's episode of Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast, we're going to talk travelling while female. What's great, what's not, and the little things that make all the difference. I'm Uta Jonker, sitting in for Ben Groundwater, and today I'm joined by two adventurous women. Sue Williams is a been there, done that woman who writes regularly for Traveller. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you, Uta.
Tara Harrison is a former travel editor, now with Intrepid Travel. Tara, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Sue, when you started travelling, did you have any female role models, or was that not something you thought about?
I don't think I really thought about it too much, because I think I started travelling when I was quite young, so I just kind of flung myself into it really, and only started thinking about it a bit later when I kind of got into a bit difficult situations. But it's interesting because I think you're quite right. Men do talk to other men in bars and they kind of do have adventures, but they don't always turn out really well. I once remember meeting a fellow traveller in Paraguay, and he was kind of a very novel traveller, really. He'd never really travelled much anywhere before, and he'd decided to go to Paraguay by... He'd got quite drunk in a pub in his hometown in Britain, and he'd thrown a dart at a dartboard with a world map on, and it ended up in Paraguay. So he'd flown to Paraguay as a bet with somebody, and he'd ended up having terrible adventures. And in fact, that night he got really drunk in this bar in Paraguay and went off with an extremely tall woman. And when I saw him the next day, it turned out that he'd gone off with a man unknowingly. So sometimes men can kind of have bad adventures too.
So do you think because we're women and we tend to be a bit more aware, we don't get into those adventures to start with, or we know that we have to get out at a certain point? Or do you get into those adventures?
I do sometimes, but it's all a question of balance. I think we have to, as women, we have to be a little bit more cautious, and we have to be a little bit more prepared and a little bit more aware of our environment and the potential dangers that might face us. But also, I think it's really important not to get too paranoid. And, you know, travel is about adventure, and you don't want to put yourself in difficult situations, but at the same time, you don't want to really limit yourself by refusing to ever take a chance. You just have to take a measured chance.
And I want to point out that between the three of us, we've been to Uganda and Ethiopia and Iran and Syria and all kinds of countries. So none of us are advocating that women should stay home and
absolutely
do
not
their knitting instead of going out and travelling.
Sure.
So, Sue, what sort of decisions do you make when you look at a country that you're going to? Are you aware, are you thinking about how you're going to be greeted as a woman, or are you just more looking overall?
I think you do actually look at how you're going to be treated as a woman as well. If you're going to the Middle East, you kind of have to have certain levels of dress. If you're going to places in Africa, you kind of have to be careful what you wear. So you kind of take that into account as well when you're looking at the cultural environment you're going to be in.
I think this is a thing men don't have, right, Tara, is that women have a travel wardrobe.
Yes.
That you sort of think about the destination you're going to and what you need to pack.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are feeling uncomfortable, then, yeah, I do know women that will wear the local dress. In Morocco, you kind of can wear cover up as much as possible if you are feeling like you're being harassed. So that's also another option.
I know that I have some sort of baggy pants that I would never wear at home, but if I'm not sure about a destination, they get flung in and I get there and I have a look around and go, yeah, it's baggy pants today.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
The other sort of standby I think that you always have to have or that I always pack is a sarong scarf kind of thing, which is practical for all kinds of reasons, but if you need, it's your head, it's your shoulders. You can wrap it over your boobs as well.
Exactly.
You know, you're going to be okay.
Yes, yeah.
Tara, are there ever sort of adventures that you've wanted to do that you feel are close to you because you're a woman?
No, but that doesn't mean that they, you know, they don't require a bit more forethought about how you're going to tackle the place and kind of prepare. And I think connecting with local women in the destination that you're going to is the one way where you're going to feel immediately reassured and ask all the questions that you want to know. So I know that when I arrived in Iran, I had a female tour leader immediately, and I had so many questions around, you know, how, whether the headscarf, which you have to wear every day and you know, constantly in public or in private, and, you know, what kind of degree of hair I could show. And she explained that to me.
Quite a surprising amount, really.
Yes, yeah, yeah, it is. They're actually quite liberal. You can really show off your roots if you want to. So,
and there's, what I loved about it is there's this whole, and this is part of the world you do get let into if you're a female. You there may be some avenues that are closed to you, some things you don't want to do. But this whole world of flirting with your scarf where you sort of put your scarf quite far back and then you let it slip back a bit. Yeah. And then if a man's looking, like, you pull it back and you kind of go, oh, no, I'm covering myself. But then you let it slip a little bit more.
So coy. Yes, I love it. Let the bangs out. Yes, there's a whole world. We could write a whole story about the dynamics of how much hair you show in Iran. So this is definitely something to think about. But I think as most destinations, I mean, we've seen women traveling to places like Saudi Arabia just recently. And I've been following quite a few women traveling around Pakistan as well in recent months. And I think these are places that perhaps would have been seen as, you know, not friendly to female travelers. So as the world opens up more and more, I don't think that there are any destinations that I would find prohibitive to travel to as a woman. It's just thinking.
And I spent some time in Pakistan and I was traveling alone, but I kind of looked around at the other women and saw exactly what they were wearing and then went out and bought exactly the same kind of clothes. And I kind of assumed that it would make me invisible, but it didn't at all.
You were still a tall blonde.
Yes. That's right, yes. And so much paler than everyone else. And I remember at one point some little boys in Lahore started throwing stones at me because they thought I was American. And but the stones didn't really hit me, so that was kind of fine. I kind of assumed that they were going to be good because they're such a good nation usually at cricket. They would kind of hit me in the head or something. But they didn't.
Oh, gosh, how awful. What year was that?
That was in probably 89.
Okay, yeah.
And but it's kind of got a lot more relaxed since then, really. But it was actually quite liberating wearing all those clothes, you know, because you don't actually have to think anymore about what you wear. You just wear the same outfit time after time. And as you say, Uta, you can wear lots of eye makeup because that's the only bit of you that's showing, really. It's kind of quite interesting because lots of women in the Middle East wear lots and lots of eye makeup because, you know, that's how they kind of flirt.
Lots of makeup and lots of lingerie. If you go to somewhere like Iran, and this was what did my head in. I mean, I was sort of wrapped up in black, you know, okay, with a scarf riding back, but whatever. And you're in the markets and in these open-air markets, there's all these lingerie stalls and you're leafing through the bras kind of thinking, there's a disconnect here.
Definitely.
And, of course, traveling by yourself as a woman, there's a lot of countries that you will attract a lot of attention. How do you guys roll with that when that happens? I mean, I'm looking at you both. You're both blonde. You're going to stick out in a lot of countries.
Yes, yeah. I think it's just being open and not expecting that people necessarily have an agenda or are looking at you because they, you know, they're just looking at you because you look different. They're just observing. So don't take it as a threat. It's literally just, oh, they're registering the difference and smile back. I was recently in Mongolia and I kind of have a different perspective around the engagement that women travellers can have with other women. We were at a Buddhist temple in Ulaanbaatar and there was a female monk and I smiled at her and she sat down with me and spoke to me for, you know, half an hour and we had the most beautiful exchange. So while, you know, men may go on these kind of wild adventures and let loose for, you know, a week without plans. I think that when we're in a place, we can really connect with the women around us. And I feel that women will always look after each other in these places. So we do have these kind of deep, kind of soulful connections when we travel, when we're open to it. And yeah, they may be looking, but it's not necessarily a bad thing.
And it is those random encounters with women in countries where maybe women aren't traveling a lot, or if they're traveling, they're surrounded by families. I mean, India is not necessarily that restrictive, but I was in rural India and got stuck. It was called an airport. It was a tin shed for several hours. And it was basically a couple of family groups, a whole bunch of men, and a Buddhist nun.
Nice.
And me. Yeah. And so we looked at each other and sat down and shared a coffee and had a chat. And,
beautiful. Yeah.
You know, there's a solidarity there. But you
mentioned, there really is. That's the word, solidarity. Yeah.
You mentioned the smiling thing.
Yes.
And see, that's my first instinct. I walk in and I smile at people because I'm a nice person, and that can get you into all kinds of trouble. And it's knowing when to smile and when not to smile, right? And often I find you want to find the older woman in the scenario who's the one who's policing you, as it were, and smile at her. And if you get her on side, you can actually feel the tension change, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good point to actually tap into that community of women. Because as a woman, it's fantastic because you can get access to other women, and men can't really do that. It's much harder for them. And you can learn about the culture from them, and you can learn about their families. And that's a really fantastic privilege that we can have. So I think sometimes we can do an awful lot more than men can. And smiling, I also smile, and sometimes it's taken the wrong way. But then you just have to be aware of when someone's taking it the wrong way. And kind of linking up with other women in a group is a great way to behave, I think, as well.
I remember on a trip in Iran, we were staying in this hostel kind of scenario where there was a kitchen where you prepped your own meals. And we went down to cook our meal one day, and it turned out, if I understand, because they spoke no English, we spoke no Farsi, there was a lot of sign language over the next couple of days. So I think they were married to a couple of brothers. And so we'd always be down there at the same time cooking dinner, and, you know, we trade ingredients, and never said a single sentence to them. But I think of them so fondly, and they were very helpful because they thought we were useless because we didn't have enough pistachio and walnuts and carrots. And they kept giving us our stuff like, really, you girls. Add the carrot. Yeah.
Contribute, yeah.
Have you ever been in a situation where you suddenly realised things were taking a turn for a worse and you had to get out of there? Or not necessarily physically extricate yourself, but change the tenor?
Yes. And when I've been in difficulty, I've sometimes found it's really helpful to say that I'm a widow. Because when you're a widow, suddenly all men tend to be incredibly respectful. They might not be respectful of you as a single woman wandering around, or even a married woman. You know, they think maybe you're a bit loose or something. But once you say you're a widow, that kind of changes everything. Then they become really respectful. I know that's a terrible lie to tell, really, especially, you know, my partner probably doesn't know that I say that about him. But that's always a really good fail-safe for me. But sometimes I've been in difficult situations which I just didn't realise were happening. Once, many years ago, I was in Egypt on the way to the pyramids, to Giza, in a public bus. The bus was absolutely packed with people, and I kind of felt a hand between my legs, and I wasn't sure if it was the crush of people or whether it was someone deliberately kind of fondling me. And at one point I realised, no, it is actually somebody doing
that
something
was quite
wrong.
Deliberate. Yeah.
Yes. And I turned round and it was a man, and I slapped his face. And that was the worst thing to have done, I discovered, because suddenly the bus was in uproar, and I kind of thought there'd be an uproar on my side. But no, they were in uproar because I was this loose Western woman coming over here. And then when I got what I deserved, I was kind of throwing it back in their faces. And the bus driver ended up having to stop the bus, and he ordered me off the bus.
Oh, no.
And then I had to walk the rest of the way to the pyramids with my backpack. And I thought after that, I will never attack a man in public again. But a few years later, I actually did. I was walking in Tegucigalpa, the capital of Honduras, and I was just walking along the street, and a man walking towards me just stuck his hand out as I walked past and touched my breast. And I was really annoyed, and I kind of thought, no, just remember what happened in Egypt? And I thought, no, bugger it. And I turned round and he was walking, but he was looking at me laughing. And I beckoned to him to come back. And he came back towards me thinking, oh, this is great. Oh, this is an opportunity. Yeah, exactly. And I just kicked him in the nuts. And then I ran as fast as I could. So, and that was, that's a really stupid thing to have done as well, because it's kind of quite a macho society there, so you can't really judge. But I kept thinking, I don't have bags on me, I can just run, I can get out of this situation. He was much more portly than me, so I knew he wouldn't be able to catch me.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. I had my bum pinched in the main square in Isfahan in Iran, which, looking back, I actually have a lot of respect for the guy who did it, because I was wearing this big black Monto. The fact that he could even find my bum was actually quite smart. But I had been in the Middle East for months at this stage, so I totally changed my perception of what was, you know, within bounds or not. And I was outraged. I was genuinely outraged. And I just turned and I was yelling at him in English. And of course, he clearly did this a lot, because he had the whole pantomime down of, what, you think I was doing something? Me? No, I did nothing, you know, waving his hands around. But there was an old guy nearby, and I don't know whether he saw it or whether he just knew young guys. And he turned around and he's yelling at the young guy in Farsi, and I'm yelling at him.
Yeah, the local men will often get involved in, yeah, defend your honour. So that's always nice to see.
And
yeah.
This is the thing, isn't it, that in a lot of countries where you feel that you might, that might be a little bit more threatening, you are actually, as a woman travelling alone, you are actually looked after in a way that can feel really kind of odd at times.
Yeah. And it's good because you're experiencing the culture. You know, in a culture where you have to be a bit more cautious as a woman, you're actually living that culture. And that's quite a valuable thing, especially to us living in Australia. It's fantastic to be a woman. And to go to a country where you don't get the same status, it can be quite a revelation to know how it feels, you know, to not be served first in a shop and to be treated kind of a little bit roughly at times. I think that's just a valuable part of travel as well.
And to have everyone ask, where's your husband?
Oh, yes. Yes, my favourite question. So I like to take the opportunity to let them know. I think so many men in different various countries will be surprised that you're travelling, you're not married and you don't have any kids. So I like to take the opportunity to educate them
on the fact that I like to educate the women, because sometimes the men can be a big problem.
Yeah. But it's nice to just have those conversations and say that it's completely, you know, normal and it's a choice. And
it's hard though, because a lot of people don't understand not having children, do they? Especially in the Middle East, because children are such a big thing. If you're a woman without children, they say, oh, so you're barren. No, my husband died before we could have the children, so we're okay.
You know, the make-believe husband is a useful tool, though. And I've got to say, this is one thing that men don't get. If you got someone who wants to sell you a rug, as a woman, you just go, I'm sorry, my husband's not here. I cannot buy anything without it.
Good one.
Works every single time.
One of the best parts of travelling is experiencing different cultures and making new connection. That's why Intrepid Travel has created a range of women's only expeditions to start new conversations around the world by offering a more in-depth understanding of cultures from a female perspective. Guided by local female leaders, these expeditions lift the veil to help you meet incredible women with unique stories, from entrepreneurs in Nepal to refugees in Turkey and mountaineers in India. Curious to learn more? Head to intrepidtravel.com/women's-expeditions for more info.
We've talked about what it feels like to travel as a woman. What about, do women do different sort of trips, Tara? What have you've been in the industry a long time. What have you found?
Yeah, so I kind of feel that women seek more internal goals when they travel.
Okay, so what do you mean
by
that?
They want revelations. They want to challenge themselves. They want to step outside their comfort zone. They really seek kind of development when they travel. You only have to look at the popularity of yoga retreats among women to see that kind of desire. And I feel like travel nowadays is moving into that self-care realm where people are taking that time out, whether they have a partner or children. And we're seeing more and more women travel solo. There's been a 31% increase in female solo travel on Intrepid trips over the past 2 years. So that's quite significant. I think that, women are really seeking you know, transformation when they travel. I wouldn't want to be too stereotypical in defining what men seek as they when they travel, but I feel like it may be those more extroverted factors like fun and adventure and things like that, whereas women are quite, you know, they want to focus on themselves. And well, that's why we're seeing that rise of the solo travel.
Yeah.
Because that's time out for them to process what's going on in their life, their goals, come back feeling new or having had some sort of revelation while they were away.
And it comes back maybe at least in part to where we started with men being able to be more spontaneous and therefore they don't necessarily go into a trip with the same sort of defined feeling. You know, we know that, okay, we're not just going to start in Pakistan and maybe hitch a ride on a motorbike across Afghanistan. So you kind of have to think a bit more about what you want and where you want to go.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yes. Yeah, I think there's an element of winging it. But yes, you have to kind of have a little bit of structure around that winging it, particularly when you're going to places that may be a bit more intimidating to travel.
And it's interesting as well because I know companies like Intrepid and other companies, they're doing a lot more women-only adventures as well, aren't they? That seems to be a growth that's happened out of nowhere, really.
Yeah, that's been a huge increase over the past few years. Particularly our most popular one is the Iran departure. So I guess that's kind of giving women access to things that they wouldn't otherwise experience, such as the beauty salons, which are, you know, women-only. And going into women's homes and cooking classes, things like that, things that the men wouldn't be able to do.
And again, it comes back to that idea of this hokey term of sisterhood. But it is true in a lot of countries that you will find that women are really interested in women from other countries in a way that men, maybe they'd like to have a chat to a foreigner, but then, you know.
Yeah.
I've got other things to do.
Do you have these wonderful conversations? You have like talk about dating and what life's like and what the social pressures are. And yeah, you really have great conversations with other women.
What's the most interesting or unexpected thing you've ever learnt on a trip from another woman in a different country?
That's a good question. I was actually surprised just that in Iran that, you know, they are dating, like it's all under wraps, and you know they'll go to places like board game cafes,
which
is the height of flirtation. It's like
party
Iran's
hard
version of a bar. Yes, yeah, yeah. And yeah, in there actually quite a few scarves I saw slipping off. So that was good just to know that it's, you know, pretty much exactly the same, just a lot more subtle.
The thing that often amuses me is you'll be in a country where women seem to be quite repressed and second-class citizens. But when you start talking to the women, you go, oh, no, you're a ballsy chick.
Absolutely.
You boss your man around.
Yes.
So it's not always what you see on the surface of a destination.
Mm. Yeah, you're quite right. A similar thing in Argentina and Buenos Aires, I was talking to women and saying, well, how do you manage to date? Because most of them will stay with their families until they actually get married and leave home. And they said, oh, we go to these special motels for the night. We just, you know, you book a hotel by an hour or for 2 hours and we just go there and see them. So it's kind of a little bit more raunchy than the board games. But yeah, but you kind of wouldn't know that if they hadn't have told you and you wouldn't be asking the question of a man.
Exactly.
So you actually get an insight into the culture in a very special way, I think.
The other interesting thing is you can get an insight into your own culture that maybe you didn't have. I remember when I was in Syria a couple of decades ago, and I'd been there for about a month, so I really had the hang of things. And then I think it was in Aleppo, and at 10 o'clock at night, I realized I needed whatever. And the market was open till 11, and it was, you know, 15 minutes walk. And without a second thought, I went out because I knew I would be perfectly safe walking to the market by myself and walking back without it. And I thought later that there's a lot of parts of Sydney that I wouldn't feel safe in doing that. And it was the first time that I actually thought about the fact that it's actually pretty bad that I can't move around my own city. Parts of it, absolutely, but parts of it not. And here I am in this country, and this country I know nothing's going to happen to me, or at least is highly unlikely to happen to me. And that was a bit of a shocking revelation for me.
Because we do tend to just assume sometimes our culture is superior to the places we're going, and it's a good shock, and it's a good memory thing to realise, no, that's really not always true at all.
Mm. And I do enjoy the interactions you do have with men sometimes. I did a train trip in India for 3 days and I was like, okay, I'm doing this easy. I'm booking myself into the first class carriage. It's going to be great. Nonetheless, I was the white woman traveling alone and I had this stream of visitors, like basically every man in first class and second class wanted to come and talk to me. And without a word being said, the guys who I was sharing my carriage with, who were all Indian, they just became my guardians and they would let them in and it would be one at a time and they would be sitting there watching them. And this would go on for about an hour or however long they decided was enough. And then it would be like, okay, show's over for the day. No more. Come back tomorrow. I'll come back in the afternoon.
They wanted some peace as well, presumably.
Actually, that was probably it as well. But, you know, there would be, you know, if I had the meal while I was coming and wanted to sell me more food and I'd said no and he was pressuring me, they'd go, no, she has enough. You know, it was weird, but it was kind of endearing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if I could do it day in, day out. All right. So we've talked about that more and more women are interested in solo travel and having these experiences. What are the top tips that you would give them?
I think if you're going to places that you do feel intimidated by as a woman, then making friends with the local women is a great place to start. Just being really open and talking to people and finding out what you can, and you'll find that you will be embraced. Maybe I'm just a total optimist about this, but I feel like
a conversation, yeah. Compliment their tone.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. and then, yeah, ask those questions and just so you feel comfortable. But yeah, I think, yeah, connecting with the local women is the best way to go about it.
Mm. Yeah, and I think sometimes if you're going into a situation you really don't know what it's about, you can always hire a guide for a day and then go with them, and then you can kind of suss out the situation a little bit too. Mm. Also, you can also team up with other female travellers. That's always a good way to go. I mean, I remember, you know, walking, doing that long, long trek to Machu Picchu and teaming up with two other women. And that was great, because otherwise it would have been quite miserable tramping up there on your own. But also, I just say do a little bit of research before you go, I mean, which is something that men maybe don't need to, but do a little bit of research, see what the situation's like, see what transport is like, and just be aware of what the situation's likely to be when you get there.
Yeah.
And I think really explore your particular destination, because you can't do a blanket brush across, say, all of the Middle East. The way you're treated as a woman traveller in, say, Iran is very different to, say, Morocco. Mm. So it's really about knowing what you're going, what you're in for, and just, you know, being aware, I think, paying attention.
Yeah. And I think one of the most important things as well is to act with authority. Like, I've met a couple of women during my travels who maybe have had bad things happen to them, and I've looked at them and I've thought, actually, I can understand maybe why you are a little bit more vulnerable, because they walk in a really tentative way, they're really nervous, they're really anxious, and it kind of shows, and then it's much easier for people to exploit them, I think. So I think just act with confidence, even if you don't always feel it. Just,
absolutely,
you know,
yes.
Yeah, fake
that
it till you make it, that
really
kind of thing.
Important as well, because, yeah, then when, you know, anything inappropriate does come from the opposite sex, you just very, like, staunchly stare at them, and I find that's enough.
Much better than hitting them.
Yeah, yes,
absolutely.
But, yeah, staring them down or walking away, I think, is another good one. And that one, I think, is particularly effective, because then if they want to keep it up, they're chasing you down, and that changes the dynamic
absolutely.
Of what locals are seeing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's been an eye-opening discussion. Sue, Tara, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, great pleasure.
And thank you for listening. And please remember to check smarttraveller.gov.au for the latest travel warnings and advice. To read more travel stories by Sue or me, visit traveller.com.au. And if you'd like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast, and we'll catch you next time on Flight of Fancy.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Flight of Fancy is hosted by Ben Groundwater. Our guest host is Uta Juncker. This podcast is produced by me, Annie Dang. Audio production by Lap Fam. Extra audio assistance by Dave McMillan and Leah Samaglu. And our digital editor at traveller.com.au is Craig Platt.